Seagrave on iTunes International.
You're listening to Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around the world, and we welcome our listeners to FM in Australia and New Zealand. I'm Henry in Sydney. Ronan Seagrave joins me from Edmonton in Canada. He's our North America correspondent. Ronan, welcome back to the show.
Good evening, Henry.
Oh dear, there's so much going on in the world. I'm not sure where to start, Ronan.
Not much of it good, Henry, unfortunately.
I know, gosh, gee. Look, let's start with recent events with that bridge. Now, the Russian President Vladimir Putin has accused Ukraine of Crimea Russian bridge blast, says Australia's ABC News. And what's interesting to me is that the bridge is a key supply route for Moscow's forces in southern Ukraine. Go figure.
Oh, absolutely, Henry, and also highly symbolic. I mean, the Russians, when they annexed Crimea from Ukraine back in 2014, spent billions of dollars building this road bridge. And it's the key link connecting Crimea to effectively the rest of Russia right now. And as you say, is being used as a a supply route for Russian forces. But clearly, the Ukrainians mounted an operation there and attacked it and did some significant damage. Of course, the response from the Russians, Henry, has been pretty brutal. But I could only describe as kind of terror bombing of
Many cities,
including Kiev, and these have not been strategic targets. I mean, they bombed a children's playground in Kiev. Mm. It tried to damage again electricity infrastructure in several of these cities. So it essentially terror bombing as a response. And you know, the whole thing, Henry. I mean, obviously in Russia, Putin is under enormous pressure at this point, Henry. I mean, he's losing this war.
It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
We've got the mobilization going on of 300,000 who will be, as no doubt, poorly trained and badly equipped as the rest of his soldiers have been. And, you know, the Ukrainians have been making very steady progress, retaking towns and villages in the Donbass region. These areas, Henry, that Vladimir Putin annexed, I would have to stress that no other country except perhaps Belarus has recognized this. The West of the world sees this as illegal occupation and annexation of Ukrainian territory. Mm. And to be honest, Henry, I mean, for Vladimir Putin to say this was a terrorist attack, it should be treated with the absolute nonsense that it is. This is a war. Mm. And Putin has brought death, destruction, and misery to Ukraine. And of course, they're going to fight back, and fair play to them, Henry.
Yep, and I want to talk about Belarus, because Belarus themselves are putting, I think it's 70,000 or 60,000 of their troops on the border with Ukraine, and they're inviting the Russians in to have a party, if you like. and this is very dangerous stuff. And Belarus, I mean, really, they're playing into the hands of Putin. Obviously, they're mates. How dangerous do you think this is for Ukraine?
Well, I think in the short term, I mean, I don't know how, again, well trained or well equipped these Belarusian military personnel and soldiers are, Henry. Mm. Maybe better than the Russians, but it does give Putin an immediate influx of men. To be frank, you know, of troops that he can use. I mean, his mobilization is going badly, Henry. We all saw those scenes of Russian men trying to flee Russia in whatever way they could once the mobilization was announced. Putin's recent set of public statements have been disturbing for many
people. To say the very least, yes.
Including, you know, nuclear saber rattling and threatening. Mm. Now, I want to stress here, Henry, that the risk here is not, you know, Vladimir Putin launching intercontinental ballistic nuclear missiles at the West. This is about the potential use of a battlefield nuclear weapon. But whatever type of nuclear weapon, Henry, would absolutely cross a Rubicon. And the Americans and NATO have, we believe, have sent a very clear message through their channels to Russia that there absolutely would be a response to this. It wouldn't be nuclear, Henry, but it would most likely be a devastating attack by NATO using conventional weapons essentially eliminating Russian military and Russian military troops. I mean, they would intervene, Henry, and simply try and kill all Russians who were in Ukraine and destroy all of their military equipment. It could even extend, Henry, into the use of air power and attacks on Russian naval vessels. So, you know, I don't honestly believe, Henry. I think a lot of this is bluster. One couldn't rule it out, but I think it's not just what Vladimir Putin thinks, Henry. I think the Russian generals and those around him would see that as something they just cannot do, and perhaps maybe applying some restraint. We also know, Henry, that there is, to put it mildly, increasing disquiet, not just amongst the Russian population, Henry, but certainly around the military leaders and other people around Vladimir Putin. They recognize this war as a disaster. They recognize they need to get out of it in some shape or form, and perhaps fear that that won't happen as long as Vladimir Putin is alive and holds power.
I just want to get back to the nuclear thing. Let's say, I mean, Putin's insane. We all know this at this point, and he's desperate. If he does use a nuclear device of some sort, there's no way you can contain how far a nuclear, the fallout from, and we all know this from Chernobyl, you know, you don't know how far this would go. You can't contain it in Ukraine. You know what I'm saying?
No, even a low yield nuclear weapon would deliver fallout, Henry. Now, that could be interpreted with the fallout sort of heading towards Poland as potentially an attack on NATO. Now, as I said, there's a number of different scenarios that Putin and the Russians could contemplate here. One is using a low-yield nuclear weapon on the battlefield. Another could be some sort of strike on a city, which would be a serious upping of I think, the response from NATO. The other thing, Henry, they could do is they could actually detonate a device in Russia on the border with Ukraine. So, i.e., you know, Putin's calculation is he hasn't crossed a sort of Rubicon. They could also potentially, Henry, detonate one off the Black Sea. Now, all of these are possible scenarios. However, I do think the use of any nuclear weapon near Henry would unquestionably result in a very large NATO response. We understand that response would be the use of conventional weapons and conventional force, but it would be quite devastating. It would be a direct intervention here in the war. I don't believe, Henry, that Vladimir Putin wants any of that. I think the people around him want it even less. Now, there's two scenarios here, Henry, around Putin. One is he's still sort of rational. The other is, has he become sort of unbalanced? There's lots of speculation, Henry, about his health, that, you know, he may have Parkinson's, he may have cancer. We simply don't know. I mean, I have to say, he doesn't look well. I mean, if you look at him and gripping the table and
he looks bloated and
he looks unwell. So, you know, there's another madman kind of scenario that he'd want to take the rest of the world with him. But it was very, other parts of the Russian government have been fairly quick to say, Henry, that, you know, nuclear war can never happen. The only way in which nuclear weapons would be used if there was a threat to the Russian state. Now, what the calculation here, Henry, is that because he has illegally annexed these the Donbass and Donetsk regions of Ukraine, that any attack by Ukraine would be seen as an attack on Russian territory and therefore could provoke a nuclear response. My personal view, Henry, is I think a nuclear response remains highly unlikely because I think of a kind of chain of events that could literally spiral out of control pretty quickly. And I don't think Vladimir Putin wants that. I think even less the people around him want that. But I think what may happen may be an upping of this kind of terror bombing, long-range artillery attacks from vessels in the Black Sea. Now, the only constraint on that, Henry, is the Russian supplies of these weapons are becoming limited with all of the sanctions, Henry. They can't just go out and buy them. They have to sort of attempt to manufacture them. As far as we know, the Chinese have declined to supply them.
I was just about to ask you that. And by the way, if you've just joined us, I'm Henry from Bondi Tunes International in Sydney, Australia. I'm talking with Ronan Seagrave in Edmonton in Canada. I was going to ask about China, because are China like playing a very dangerous game, I guess? If they go too far, this will affect their trade with the rest of the world, surely.
Yes. I mean, I think they're playing probably a fairly careful one, Henry. I mean, the mood music coming out of them, and indeed India, is around they want this de-escalator, that, you know, war is not an answer to complex geopolitical problems right now. And there's no doubt that China could play a role of a restraining hand here. The Chinese, Henry, won't want the detonation of any kind of nuclear weapon here, and may well have delivered that message to Putin. You'd be on your own. The other calculation that China is considering is how all this plays out, Henry, and the Taiwan issue.
Yes.
You know, China suddenly realizes that if it was in itself to launch any kind of attack on Taiwan, that it would face, again, devastating sanctions and, again, a potential military intervention, neither of which I think, Henry, China wants. The Chinese, Henry, are great at playing the long game on these. You know, I think even if we get saber-rattling on Taiwan, it doesn't mean they're about to do anything. But they do see this as a, you know, a set of scenario and circumstances. The other thing that China doesn't like about any of this, Henry, is that it is emboldening and re-empowering the West. Putin made a calculation that the West was divided, it was weak, you know, the Trump era, you know, questioning whether NATO should even exist. And I think Putin calculated that the response would be fragmented, he wouldn't face the degree of sanctions, there wouldn't be the scale of the support for the Ukrainians with military equipment, including really lethal weaponry here being used. I don't think he thought those things would happen to the same extent. So it's really breathed new. I mean, we've got Sweden and Finland and other countries now wanting to join NATO. Yes. We've got Poland, Henry, now sort of saying, which I can see happening, that it needs a nuclear deterrent, you know. And that's the world we're in right now. Of course, Henry, if something were to happen to Vladimir Putin and a new leader, I mean, there's one scenario, Henry, you could get somebody worse, but let's just say it's a scenario where he is removed and a leader comes in and immediately sort of wants to end this war with some kind of face-saving settlement, then things change. I think what's obvious, Henry, is that the ability for Russia to threaten the West with conventional force, Henry, is something like a bad joke right now. It just is. There just isn't one, you know.
Yeah. On that note, Ronan, I just want to talk about the supplies that the Russians have in terms of military power. You know, I've been watching CNN, and it's interesting that you know, Putin hit all these cities recently, okay, including the capital, Kiev, and you have to wonder if this is just a really, we know it's all about the Crimean Bridge thing, response, retaliation. But you have to wonder if he's just blasting all this stuff and that if, you know, into all these cities, and if they're going to run out of stuff, you know.
I mean, they do. They will have supply problems, Henry. I mean, they're using some of their old Iskander missiles. They can use, obviously, intercontinental missiles with conventional warheads on them. But yeah, there is a limit, Henry. They've also been using hypersonic weapons, which are quite devastating. And it's got some of the most devastating conventional weapon you could use. But yes, they do have supply problems, Henry. And that's been the issue here, that if we remember, Henry, back in February, the Russian game plan was them to sort of marching into Kiev within a few weeks and overthrowing a government. Even yesterday, still referring to them as Nazis, and putting in a kind of puppet regime. Well, that's totally and utterly out the window. And the past few months have been military setback after military setback, you know, losing cities. The Russian and the Ukrainian advance, they're now potentially threatening Kharkiv, Henry, in terms of taking that out of Russian hands.
Yes.
So at the moment, the Russians are losing more and more territory. The other thing that will come into play, Henry, will be the winter, where you know the type of kind of heavy battlefield warfare is just not going to be happening in the same way. So we could have a period, Henry, where perhaps not a whole lot is happening. But what Putin would use the winter months for is to try and sort of replenish his supplies, his military equipment supplies. He's lost a lot of tanks, or personnel, even aircraft that have been shot down. We give him an opportunity to try and somehow replenish that, whether he's trying to make some more domestic production or whatever. Obviously, the mobilization piece. as I say, I think that the nuclear thing at the moment, I have to stress to listeners not to be worried or lying awake at night around this. The intelligence the West has is there's been absolutely no change in the Russian nuclear posture. They haven't done something, Henry, that suggests they're about to use even a battlefield weapon.
Yeah, it's interesting because winter's a big deal, actually, isn't it?
It is.
Because
they
have very cold winters, and this started in the winter. And they've been through the summer now, and they're going into winter again. I just feel for the Russian people. I do feel for the Russian people, actually, very much so.
You've got all of this. You know, we have to stress, Henry, that the Russian people have been told lies. They're being lied to. They've been lied to that... with the propaganda that this is, you know, the Ukrainians regime and President Zelensky are Nazis. I mean, President Zelensky is Jewish. I mean, it's utterly untrue. They have been lied to. But I think, Henry, they're starting to understand that they have been lied to. If you, there's no desire, certainly for Russian men, to get into uniform and fight this war. We know from troops the Ukrainians have captured that they've kind of given up easily, Henry. They don't want to be in Ukraine. They don't see point of what it is they're doing.
And also, Putin is, you know, what they've been doing, the Kremlin, have been forcing men of my age, 60 years old, into war, and people who are not stable psychologically. I mean, this is disgraceful.
Going to jails with this sort of Wagner unit, which operates as almost a unit consisting of murderers and rapists. I mean, it's quite frightening. But the other thing, Henry, to realise is that this type of army up against a professional, well-equipped NATO forces, Henry, not a chance in hell. And that is obvious right now. So the idea that Putin's going to be sort of marching into the Baltics, none of that is going to happen unless he really is insane. And I think he is still desperate to avoid any kind of direct engagement by NATO in this conflict.
It's fascinating. I mean, you know, everyone is saying in the media anyway that this is going to be a long war. And what has it been, 7 months or something?
Yes. I mean, there are any number of scenarios here. I mean, obviously the winter could bring a lull. We don't know what could happen in Russia around Putin. I mean, is he ill? Would there be some kind of palace coup? Would he, as low a percentage chance to get been the use of a nuclear weapon and that being a game changer? At some point, Henry, and soon, hopefully, this war has to end.
Yes.
And the question of how it ends and in what way it ends and what that then means for Russian security and for European security and global security. I was reading an article, and I don't think it's probably that far off the mark, Henry, that the fall of Putin, if that happens, could even result in the breakup of Russia. I mean, we've got republics in Russia who have become, you know, let's just say privately they've made their feelings clear on what's going on, and you could see, you know, regions within Russia, you know, wanting to have greater freedom or even break away from it. So far from creating his new empire, Henry, Vladimir Putin may have just well sown its seeds of destruction.
Yeah. And just briefly back to the nuclear thing. Let's do a hyperbole here. Let's say they did nuke. How would NATO respond? I mean,
I think as far as we know, Henry, and we know that NATO Americans have communicated to the Russians. I mean, we saw Joe Biden, you know, making it very clear. We believe, Henry, that what NATO has said to Russia is that if that happens, they will face a devastating conventional war attack. It will not be nuclear. If it's a battlefield weapon, it will not be a nuclear response by NATO, but they will be intervening and they will bring all of their firepower.
Will they be in the air? Because this is something
there would be a direct intervention here. It would be seen as crossing a line that is totally and utterly unacceptable. And, you know, the strategy from NATO would be essentially to destroy Russian conventional military capability to threaten anybody again. Now, that, Henry, would raise a risk of a further nuclear response by Russia. However, there are calculations in NATO, Henry, that I think at that point the chances of some kind of intervention against Putin will become sky high. There's also the possibility, Henry, of, you know, the chain of command, which is the same in NATO and the United States around nuclear
we keep going on about red buttons, Henry, but it's not like that. You know, there are complex chains of commands here. And one would question whether Russian generals and military would just blindly go ahead and follow orders to use nuclear weapons. I think that's actually a bit uncertain, Henry, that they actually would.
It's not the movies, you know.
I think, though, at the moment, Henry, it's much more likely to be bluster. And I think Putin knows that the response would be devastating. Now, you then get into the madman scenario. Well, if he's a dying man, has become mentally unhinged, does he care? He seems to have no regard whatsoever for humanity. And there's always a risk of that. But again, I think it's unlikely. So I think it's unlikely, but it cannot be ruled out that he would do so. But I think the consequences, Henry, would be devastating for him. Yes, it could provoke, Henry, a Cuban missile type crisis type moment.
From 1962,
I don't believe, Henry, you know, intercontinental ballistic nuclear missiles are going to start flying around the world. I don't think that scenario is going to happen. But some sort of exchange beyond that could happen, Henry. And certainly devastating conventional firepower by NATO would be brought into this war to end it.
I just want to, just before we leave this subject, you know, the way you mentioned that the people of Russia are seeing one national television station, and a lot of them believe what they're seeing. But on the other side of that coin, a lot of Russians are leaving.
Well,
Russia.
It's the men, Henry. The men who were younger men. I mean, there's probably been differing degrees of sympathy that other countries have had for them, Henry, to be frank. But again, I don't think you can blame these people. I think they are leaving, Henry, because they do not want to be conscripted. They do not want to form part of what is the only Russian or Soviet mobilization that has happened since the Second World War.
Yes.
They just do not want. They do not want to fight. Why? You know. And perhaps, Henry, as I say, as time is passing, perhaps a realization that, and getting other information in, that the Ukrainians are not being run by Nazis. This is a horrible, totally unprovoked, criminal, unjustified war, and why would these people want to be part of it?
You mentioned the Second World War. It's an interesting parallel when you think about it. People in, you know, if you look at the Second World War, people in the underground tube stations in London, and we've got the same thing has been happening for the last however many months, people in underground stations. It's just so many similar things. I think that the future of this is very uncertain. Before we leave this, I just want to ask you what you think. What do you think is going to happen? Go out there and be daring, Ronan. What do you think is Ukraine going to win this war?
Yes, Ukraine will win this war, and I think it will ultimately lead to the end of Vladimir Putin in one shape or form. I don't think even history shows, Henry, Russian or even Soviet leaders surviving this kind of humiliation. He has lost this war. The objectives that he set for this war, he hasn't achieved and quite frankly can't. And this is, anybody of a sane mind, Henry, would be looking to end this and to come to some sort of settlement, perhaps some sort of self-ruling autonomy for these Russian areas of Ukraine, whatever. But he has lost this war, Henry. His objectives to overthrow the regime, he has failed. He is not going to achieve those objectives. Massive miscalculations in relation to the professionalism and capability of Russian forces. Massive miscalculations around the response from the West and NATO in terms of support and weaponry. So it's been an absolute disaster for Putin, Henry. Everybody around him knows it. And I think the most likely scenario is that he is removed in some shape or form. A new Russian leader comes in and ends this war. An alternative scenario, Henry, is there is a use of a battlefield nuclear weapon. There is a devastating response from NATO, and the war ends with a sort of massive depletion of Russian conventional forces, which I believe, Henry, would then obviously lead to the end of Putin and probably the breakup of Russia, Henry, to be honest.
Gosh. Okay, we're going to take a music break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about North Korea and those missile tests that are going into places or near places like Japan or over Japan. And of course, into South Korea, which is causing a lot of trouble. Okay, we'll be back in a minute.
painted Salford smoke it up. Some cardboard boxes from the shop and parts of Ancoats where I used to play. I'm sure he once walked down our street, 'cause he painted kids who had out on the feet. The clothes he wore had all seen better days. Lowry didn't care much anyway. They said he just paints cats and dogs and matchstick men in boots and clogs, and Lowry said that's just the way they'll stay. And he painted matchstick men and matchstick cats and dogs. He painted kids on the corner of the street that were sparking. It's matchstick men and matchstick cats and dogs. Now canvas and brushes were wearing thin when London started calling him to come on down and wear the old flat cap. They said, tell us all about your ways and all about them Salford days. Is it true you're just an ordinary chap? And he painted matchstick men and matchstick cats and dogs. He painted kids on the corner of the street that were sparking clogs. Now he takes his brush and he waits outside the factory gate to paint his matchstick men and matchstick cats and dogs. Now Lowry's hung upon the wall beside the greatest of them all, and even the Mona Lisa takes a bow. This tired old man with hair like snow told northern folk it's time to go. The fever came and the good Lord mopped his brow, and he left his matchstick men and matchstick cats and dogs. He left his kids on the corner of the street.
You're listening to Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around the world. I'm Henry in Sydney, and I'm talking with our correspondent in North America, Ronan Seagrave, in Edmonton in Canada. Right, now, I don't know if there's saber-rattling going on.
There is more saber-rattling, Henry.
In North Korea, is it?
Yeah, it is saber-rattling, Henry. I mean, okay. You know, obviously the world has been focused quite rightly on Ukraine and the war with Russia, but Kim Jong-un, he hasn't gone anywhere.
No.
And he's back again testing missiles. You know, one went rather close to Japan, which was sort of triggered an alert.
I think it went right over Japan.
I think it went right over them. And I think also, Henry, the it's been, again, accompanied by the usual bellicose kind of language coming out of the North Koreans, saying they now have the nuclear, they're going to be a nuclear power, they've got the nuclear capability to launch, you know, intercontinental ballistic missiles, missiles with nuclear warheads that could hit South Korea. Again, it's a, again, a very dangerous situation, Henry. I wouldn't want to underplay it. You know, we've had the saga of Kim Trump era. I can assure you there's going to be no meeting between Joe Biden and Kim Jong-un.
The love affair, yes.
That is just not going to happen. Again, this is another problem that the US posture here hasn't changed, Henry, in terms of obviously overwhelming support for South Korea, the acknowledging that, saying to the North Koreans bluntly and directly that any type of military attack either on South Korea or Japan will be met with an overwhelming response. Now, the difference here, Henry, is that Kim Jong-un could actually deliver mass destruction on Seoul. There's no question about that, Henry, in terms of mass artillery barrages and bombings. Artillery particularly, Henry, just massive artillery fire happening and coming into Korea would likely kill many thousands of people. The US would have to make a call then, Henry, around, again, does the response remain purely conventional? Obviously, any use of a nuclear weapon by Kim, Henry, is death to North Korea. That's the only way I could describe
it. And we do have parallels here with Ukraine and Russia and North and South Korea, because it's kind of similar. Of course, America won't get directly involved in the Russia-Ukraine situation.
They certainly would here, Henry, though.
Yeah. That was my question to you, Ronan Seagrave.
No, absolutely. They are guaranteeing security of South Korea. Any type of attack on South Korea, whether conventional or nuclear, would be met by a direct response from the United States and its allies, Henry. A nuclear attack, as insane as I'm saying this, by Kim, either on South Korea or Japan, I think would be met probably with a nuclear response, Henry, to be frank. I think the response would be just to turn Pyongyang into ashes. That'd be the end of it.
That's very, very, very dangerous stuff, isn't it? And North Korea's state news agency said that these missile tests were in response to recent naval drills between the US and Korean forces.
These drills have been happening all the time, Henry. I mean, of course they're having drills and preparing.
Of course.
They've just been dealing with an ever-increasingly insane set of dictators coming out of North Korea. The issue, Henry, that and what the United States has always relied on is the restraining hand of China. China absolutely does not want any type of conflict, and it absolutely does not want a unified Korea, which would only be a South Korea, you know, like West Germany, East Germany, would be South Korea swallowing up whatever the hell would be left of the North. They don't
As a matter of interest, Ronan, what is China's relationship with North Korea? Do they trade?
Well, they did a bit, and apparently even that stopped recently, Henry, and you know, China's strategic desire has always been not to have a unified Korea, a South Korea taking over the North right on its borders. It doesn't want that, and it does see North Korea. At the same time, Henry, you know, the Chinese view the North Korean leadership is at best highly erratic. They are not in favor of this kind of saber rattling and bellicose language and testing weapons and making these kind of threats. It's not what China wants to see. It doesn't want to see the fall of North Korea. The other thing, Henry, I think the Chinese might be a bit concerned about, though, is if, for example, Kim Jong-un did something and the response was conventional, Henry, and you know, Pyongyang was taken by combination of the United States and Japan and South Korea, might they find documents, Henry, that might suggest that China might have had some involvement in some shape or form around its nuclear weapons program? Possibly. Well, certainly Western intelligence would suggest the Iranians. George W. Bush, Henry, wasn't that far wrong, much as he was wrong about a lot of other things. He wasn't that far wrong about an axis of evil. If we're seeing what's going on in Iran right now, that the Iranians certainly may have had a hand here. But
the Americans actually finding that out about China, Henry, would be actually quite serious and would provoke a response of some sort. How have they developed the technology for these missiles, and how are they developing nuclear
technology? As in, you're saying North Korea?
Yeah, I mean, they can't be doing it themselves. So they've had help.
I've often wondered that, actually, yeah.
So the help can only really come from two sources, Henry. Well, possibly Russia as a third. Could only come from Russia, Iran, and China. It can't come from anywhere else, you know?
Yeah. Iran's an interesting one, too. I mean, there's a lot of protests going on, Henry, as you know.
I think at some point, Henry, and Iran has a young population. It's like anything, Henry. You can only oppress people for so long, you know.
And they're shutting down the internet there as well. I mean, for goodness' sake.
I mean, again, it's you know, they have had elections. I know they've had elections, but we all know where the power rises. It's with the Ayatollah Khamenei. He's the supreme leader that he elected by anybody. He succeeded Ayatollah Khamenei, and they run a ferocious anti-Western regime. I mean, there's no question, Henry, that Iran is one of the biggest global sponsors of global terrorism. I mean, Hezbollah, sort of their terrorist arm, is more better armed than conventional armies that some countries have. They've interfered in Syria. They interfere in Lebanon. None of it is good, Henry. It has actually, though, created a reshaping of the Middle East. We've certainly had Israel signing peace agreements with Gulf states such as the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain. There is unofficial as yet cooperation with Saudi Arabia. We think, Henry, at some point Israel is going to sign a treaty with Saudi Arabia. And all of these countries with Israel have one thing in common. The common enemy is Iran.
Why aren't we seeing this or hearing this from the news media outlets? I mean, Iran, you know, the only news that I've seen on Iran is because of a woman who died in a protest because she didn't want to wear a burqa.
I mean, you're right, Henry. It doesn't get probably the coverage that it deserves. I mean, as I say, we've seen this reshaping around Iran is a Shia Muslim country, and it's a combination of Sunni Muslim countries in Israel that are coming together against this common threat. We know, Henry, that they're trying to continue with their nuclear program. There have been various attempts, Henry, to restart the treaty that Barack Obama agreed and Trump tore up.
Trump,
That doesn't seem to be going anywhere. And again, the posturing from the Iranians has been quite aggressive. I mean, it is obviously, Henry, a serious global issue for the Iranians to get their hands on a nuclear weapon or to have that kind of technology. The deterrent, obviously, Henry, is Israel, because as we know, even though not officially acknowledged, they do have nuclear weapons.
Oh, of course, supplied by the Americans, of course.
Indeed.
Yeah, interesting to see what will happen in Iran because, you know, as far as I understand, they claim to be a democratic state. Yeah, right.
Well, they've had elections, Henry. I mean, but...
Are they real?
But the only kind of candidates who can start going forward are supporters of the regime and pledging loyalty to the supreme leader. So that they're not open in the sense, you know, you in Australia, me in Canada would recognise them. And, you know, it's got a young population. And you know, I've read various articles in Iran, Henry. There's quite a big sort of underground youth scene where people do sort of gather together and in sort of home discourse and alcohol and things like that.
Yeah, I forgot. Yeah, alcohol, go figure. It's interesting because there are a lot of young people in Iran and they're pretty switched on. I mean, they're cool people, you know what I mean?
I think the tragedy of it, Henry, is that Iran should be a much bigger player in the global economy and as part of, you know, as a trading country, then unfortunately it is right now, and with different kind of leadership, that could happen. But at the moment, Henry, we know that the regime, any time, Henry, there's been dissent or protests, the regime pushes down brutally, and executions and incredible violence and these protests are getting a similar response. But you have to think, Henry, at some point something has to give there, you know.
to me. Oh, war and despair, cause it means destruction of innocent life. War means tears to thousands of mothers have when their sons go up to fight and lose their life. I said war. Good God, y'all.
Joined us. I'm talking with Ronan Seagrave in Canada. I'm Henry in Sydney for Bondi Tunes International. I won't keep you much longer, Ronan. Just got to have a bit of a fun chat towards the end of this interview. Michael Moore predicts Democrats will win.
Pondered as he is, yes.
Predicts Democrats will win big in the midterms in America, which are coming up in a couple of months. Could he be right, Ronan Seagrave?
Well, you know, he was right in 2016. He was the one person saying all along that he thought Donald Trump would win the election.
And no one listened to him.
And he was right. Mm. Now, what's changed, Henry? There are a number of things. If we were talking sort of 5-6 months ago, we'd be talking about the Republicans, you know, sweeping the Senate and sweeping the House. Mm. A couple of things have changed, Henry, since then. Number one, and by far the biggest, has been the overturn of Roe versus Wade and abortion.
Yeah, that's pissed a lot of people off.
Yeah, sure. And it's galvanized a lot of Democrats, particularly a lot of female Democrat voters, to really mobilize and get involved and recognize this is really, really serious. And so I think that will at least, Henry, dent how well the Republicans will do. There's no question about that. I think another issue has been some of these... You know, Trump candidates are celebrity candidates, Henry, that have suddenly come into this. I mean, one has been, he's running for the Senate in the state of Georgia, Henry, and he's up against a current Democrat sitting Senator, Reverend Raphael Warnock. He's a guy called Herschel Walker, and he's a former American football player. So someone quite well known, Henry.
Yeah.
But every time he's opened his mouth, he's put his foot in it. He came out, Henry, with, you know, draconian sort of anti-abortion. You know, abortion is not permissible in any circumstances. It was then revealed, Henry, that a woman came forward that he had made payments to. He'd had an affair with, including paying for her to have an abortion. Other women have come out. In the same week, Henry, his own young son did a video basically saying what a terrible person he was and what an awful father he was, and he never couldn't care less if he ever saw him again. So that's one. The other one, Henry, who's, you know, been a bit of a farce, and I don't know whether this guy makes it onto Australian TV. He's Dr. Mehmet Oz, or Dr. Oz, who has did have a sort of daily talk show in the US.
Sounds familiar.
It started off sort of pushing sort of quack medical products, and then sort of became a more kind of chat show. He's running to be a senator in Pennsylvania. He got into trouble, Henry, when he decided to do a filmed piece in a supermarket, which was supposedly about how expensive food was getting in the sort of cost of living crisis. But first of all, he got the name of the supermarket wrong. And then he started talking about his wife wanting a crudité. And people, crudité? And what do you mean by that? And then he started mixing up the prices of what he was getting. And the whole thing just became a kind of a joke, Henry, that, you know, Pennsylvania is a very blue-collar state. You wouldn't have people talking about crudités. They'd say, we're having a salad, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting how there's so much silliness that happens before the federal election and also before the midterms. You've got these crazy people coming out of the bushes, don't you?
You do. I mean, the other person, again, making the news recently was our old friend Henry Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Oh, yes.
Congresswoman who is just literally nuts. She's the lady who accused Israel of having a giant laser beam directed at the United States. She's made the headlines again, Henry, for reasons that she'd rather not, in that obviously her long-suffering husband has decided he's had enough and is suing for divorce. And Marjorie Taylor Greene, Henry, has actually apparently had a number of affairs in the past, and there's a suggestion that she might have had another one. But he said, and of course, I think he's timed this, Henry, for the election and sort of an announcement saying that, you know, he's had enough and he's suing Marjorie for divorce. She's still being, as sane as it sounds, Henry, still being linked to, if Donald Trump, God help us, is the Republican nominee in 2024, that she might be his running mate.
Well, bring it on, I say.
That's as nuts as that sounds.
I just want to get back to Michael Moore's, you know, predicting that the Democrats will win big.
You're right, Henry. I mean, he could be. I mean, the abortion thing is one.
That's a huge thing.
Then we've had all this, you know, Trump's legal problems and these documents, these confidential documents, privileged documents, classified documents that Trump had at Mar-a-Lago. And that's still probably going to go all the way to the Supreme Court, Henry. There's been this sort of special master appointed, but it hasn't worked out as favorably as Trump thought.
Indeed.
And issues he has in New York. But I think it's also, Henry, that there's some of these candidates, you know, I've mentioned just a couple, that are just really mad and have no business, you know, running for public office. And whether that's just...
But Ronan, the law,
the vote, you know?
The law is that they can. I mean, you remember in British politics, you'd have these Mad Hatter kind of names. Well, give me an example of one.
Like, you know, you always had the sort of, you know,
the colourful,
you know, you always had, I mean, Irish politics is notorious for these kind of independents, you know, these kind of, you know, Gombeen men who sort of come up, I tell you, you know, about this, and you know, that kind of stuff.
From Kerry.
the Healy Rays and people like that. But I think there's a couple of things that are obviously disturbing. One, that people who are just totally ignorant and saying things, you're lying and saying things are not true. People again who claim that Donald Trump was defrauded out of the last election are lying, completely untrue, and which is dangerous. It is dangerous. Whether Michael Moore is right, he could be. I have respect from him, Henry, that he got it right in 2016.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't listen to him at the time.
He does have, you know, deep networks into the Democratic Party, but not so much the establishment, Henry, but what's actually happening on the ground. And what he's hearing is, unlike previous midterms where
stupidly, a lot of Democrats have stayed at home, that they've no intention of doing that this time. And
Bilton, sorry, yes.
The other thing, Henry, that I think is a slight motivator here is attempts by Republicans to restrict voting rights. And I think in some states, that's also acting as a potential motivation for Democrats, you know?
I just want to quickly mention Bill Maher, who is, he does a talk show, a nighttime talk show on HBO, and he's great.
It's always entertaining, Henry. Often sometimes I don't agree with him, but
I do like
watching people sometimes I don't agree with, because it's always interesting, you know?
Yeah, and he's very good. I mean, what intrigues me about him is that Fox News keep on saying he's great because he knocks the libs. And he laughs at that. He thinks that's hilarious. He says, look, you know, and he does knock the Democratic Party. He said they're weak.
Well, sometimes with real justification, Henry. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's it. I mean, it is true to say. I mean, he just tells what he thinks is the truth.
He's right, Henry, about their weakness. He's right about the sort of hard left of the Democratic Party, which just turns off the vast majority of Americans. Mm. I think Bill Maher is a good old-fashioned independent. You know, he's somebody that likes politicians who frankly talk a bit of sense and actually care about certain issues. And yes, he's sort of calling out incompetence or, you know, the Democrats getting the culture wars and that kind of thing. So he often talks a lot of sense in that. There's some other views that he has. I mean, I completely disagree with his views on Islam. I think those views are wrong. And I don't think he has justification for them. But on many other things, yeah, he's got a point, Henry, about the weakness of the Democrats, hard left.
And they need to be, they need to be updating themselves. They need to get into the now, because ironically, I'm using the word conservative, but these Democrats are quite conservative. I don't mean politically, but in terms of the fact that they're not out there hitting with stuff, you know?
No, I mean, I think all politicians, Henry, have to have some sense of where the people are and what they care about. And it's always been that middle ground or middle America. The Democrats who have won elections have been very centrist. You know, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama. You can't get much more establishment Democrat than Joe Biden, you know, in the Senate.
Yes, true.
You know, so they haven't been, you know, the Bernie Sanders or, you know, do you know what I mean? So you know, the Democrats have always been successful when they've been in the center and when they actually do things that actually make a difference to real people. I think, you know, the interesting thing is that they have done things that make a real difference to people around sort of college debt and infrastructure and drug pricing and things like that. The problem right now, Henry, is that the economic circumstances are not great. We've got cost of living, we've got high inflation in the US, we've got gas prices, even though they started to come down. It's not a great economic set of circumstances for Joe Biden and the Democrats.
Yeah. Okay, we must leave it there. Ronan Seagrave in Edmonton, Canada, it's always good to have you on our broadcast.
It's a pleasure as always, Henry. Take care.
This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio. Bob Gallico!
It's Pop Go the Classics, or How to Get a Good Tune Without Paying Royalties. 1945 saw the team of Chopin and Como once again making waves in the pop world. Chopin contributed this from the Polonaise in A-flat major. And the team of Ted Mossman and Buddy Kay, who had been responsible for that earlier bit of classical rating, Full Moon and Empty Arms, supplied the music and lyrics. And Perry Como teamed up with Chopin for another success, Till the End of Time. Well, for a few years anyway.
In the blue, long as there's a spring of birds to sing, I'll go on loving you. there's roses bloom in May. My love for you will grow deeper with every passing day, till the wells run dry and each mountain disappears. I'll be there for you to care for you through laughter and through tears. So take my heart in sweet surrender and tenderly say that I'm the one you love and live for till the end of time. Till the wells run dry and each mountain disappears, I'll be there for you to care for you through laughter and through tears. So take my heart in sweet surrender and tenderly say that I'm the one you love and live for till the end of
Henry O'Donovan.